Yo, 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 yo. What's up, all you burners, stoners, and potheads out there? This is Weedman 420 with the Weedman 420 Chronicles. How are all you vipers doing out there this evening? Mrs. Weedman, how the hell are you?
I'm well. How are you?
How are you feeling after the acupuncture today?
I had really good acupuncture today.
She's like doing some holistic witchcraft medicine on
you. No, there's no witchcraft.
I like acupuncture.
Eastern medicine.
I'm not making fun of it at all. I go to acupuncture. You know that. Actually, I need to go back. But hey, everybody. Mrs. Weedman and I were talking all week long about when we smoke on this show. And it was kind of funny because we smoke on this show for a lot of reasons. The enjoyment of it. It gets us in a zone and a good flow. But also, we smoke a lot of different strains. And we tell you about the strains we're smoking, even though we've been smoking a lot of home grow too. But the strains that we smoke from a lot of different cultivators, we get it from a lot of different dispensaries, we get it from friends, people that home grow themselves. And we smoke so you can see how the effects of the cannabis strain we're smoking affects us during the show. So it was kind of funny because we were talking about it. And the last episode, we smoked that Hippie Crippler. And Mrs. Weedman and I both noticed very much how we slowed our tone as the show kept on going. We were laughing about it because we were crippled. That strain crippled us. I love it. I still have half of that joint left I'm savoring.
It's not a good strain for the show, though. My gosh, we were like monotone. Really,
I was slumping during the show. One day we'll have a YouTube channel and you guys can all watch how we smoke and how it like affects us. And I was slumping. But yes, we want to let you know, we smoke a lot of different strains. So you can see if you ever want that strain or ever smoke that strain, your effects might be different than ours. Or you might be like, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Weedman, smoke that strain. And it affected me exactly the way it affected them. They called it out right. So, you know, hopefully, you know, you understand why we do the smoking on the show, the enjoyment factor especially being number one. Also, I love doing the show high.
But we also want to smoke because a large premise of what we do is to try to break the stigma of cannabis.
Stomping that shit.
We just want to stomp it, right? So we want to show people that here we are, just two normal working.
Speak for yourself. I'm not normal.
Yeah, we're not really normal. we're kind of normal. Most people would think that we're really normal, but we're not. But maybe everybody would say that about themselves. But I mean, here we are just like in like a normal neighborhood, safe, good environment, working, doing our things, being professionals. And guess what? We smoke weed. Whoa.
Every day.
And guess what? We still go to work the next day. Whoa.
Every day.
And guess what? We could still function. Whoa.
Every day.
So we're just trying to help people understand that it's okay and that you can still function and you can still be productive. It's not going to make you some lazy couch sitting unproductive human being.
I don't think that's so cannabis. I think it's just...
It's not. That is the stigma.
The stigma.
That we're trying to help stop.
Right.
So, and bring awareness to the inequities that are involved in the cannabis industry. We definitely want to keep that as a high priority. You know, because then you look at us and you say, oh, there they are, those white middle-class people with good jobs and while they smoke weed in their basement. Cool. They're real cool. And, you know, but there's stigmas with that. Mr. Weedman's making faces at me like, why'd you go there right now?
Yeah.
But really, I mean, there's inequities, right? I mean, there's people that have been smoking weed. It's been part of their lives forever. And Mr. Weedman has a longer history with cannabis than I do.
13.
I was your like typical like high school kid who tried it a few times and ultimately never really cared that much for it because I didn't understand how it made me feel and I didn't like it. I don't like that sense of losing control. But here I am, you know, for the last 10 years revisiting it and really learning to appreciate it. And there's space in it for all of us, really. But I think it's really important that we focus on, as this becomes this ever-evolving, huge kind of corporate, very corporate business, the legal market I'm talking about, we have to give back and we have to recognize all of the injustices that have been served on people for so many years because of the war on drugs. So we really want that to be a big focus for us too. And hopefully we encourage you, our listeners, to not only help stop the stigma, share and educate, but also try to find ways that you can help with those inequities, inequalities, and give back to the communities that have been so negatively affected by cannabis and the war on drugs.
I just think what the Beastie Boys said.
What?
You got to fight for your right.
To party.
To smoke.
Yeah, that too. There's some good people fighting for our rights to smoke right now.
Every day. Every day.
I appreciate that too. You know, there's just a place for everybody. That's what it really comes down to. There is a place in the world for everybody. There really is. There's room for all of us.
100%. Man, you went deep there for a second.
Yeah.
Let's fucking smoke.
Did I make your frown turn upside down? Because you didn't like what I said there for a second.
It's not that I didn't like what you said.
You just didn't understand why I was going there.
Yeah, you went there.
I'm good?
You're good.
We good?
We're good.
Good.
Good. Let's smoke.
Let's smoke. Oh, I'm smoking. I'm smoking a joint.
We are smoking a joint that we...
Is this that Paris?
No, this is Sour Patch.
Oh, this is from Seattle.
Yes, this is from...
This is our fun stuff.
Yes, from the Pacific Northwest. It is basically this grower is out of... it's naturally grown in Lake Stevens, Washington, which I'd like to thank all you people from Lake Stevens, Washington and Washington... Lake Stevens, Washington West for listening because you guys kill it. We appreciate you out there. But this
that,
is...
Hold on, I'm going to interrupt because that was from a dispensary called OZ, like ounce, the abbreviation. And there were two bud tenders there. You walk in, real simple store, simple concept. I'm going to choke on that hit. and they had clipboards from like floor to ceiling, the whole three walls of the store. You know, the fourth wall was the counter. The other three walls were clipboards, floor to ceiling, and clipped to the boards was their menu of goods. And they had it broken down. I think it was by like hybrid sativa indica. So I just asked the bud tender, like, hey, what do you recommend? I want some fun stuff. Like, I want to be silly, not too heady.
This
good
one
stuff.
Was very talkative.
Yeah. So he pointed out his favorite grower was, you know, A and B. And I liked A's entire menu of options. So I bought some pre-rolls. And this is one of them.
Yeah.
So thank you, Guy.
Sour Patch is a sativa dominant hybrid, 60% sativa, 40% indica. This one is 21.9%. And I'm good. It's a crossing between Sour Diesel and Sour Kush. No wonder why you like it so much, because you love the Kush strains. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy cross that results in the ultimate Sour Kush flavors with tonguey, tingling taste of sweet yet sour lemony pine and taste bud melting Sour Diesel. The aroma is slightly pungent with hints of Sour Diesel and an overtone of spicy Kush that has an even sour kick as the nugs are broken apart and smoked. It tastes maybe beyond sour, but the effects are sickly sweet. Sour Patch packs a potent high that's well-balanced with fully effects that are great for day or night. It starts with slowly building euphoric onset. I can attest that because we smoked it on Friday and I was feeling... We were in deep conversation, but I was floating. As the effects build, your body will fall into a sense of relaxation and calm. I can say that, leaving you happy and ease, although still slightly energetic and able to function. 100% on that one. These effects and its moderate 18 to 21% average THC level make Sour Patch perfect for treating conditions such as chronic pain, fatigue, chronic stress, anxiety, depression, mood swings. Sour Patch buds have round, tiny little dust green nugs with lots of thin amber hairs and frosty thick coating of amber crystal trichomes. Effects is, like we said, happy, relaxing, relieve symptoms of anxiety, chronic pain, depression, fatigue, mood swings. Yeah, I enjoyed this when we smoked it the other night. I thought it was great, and we're going to see how we do on the show on it. Once again, it is Pride Month, everyone out there, and Mrs. Weedman is going to take over and talk about a great article. I actually really like this article, and I'm going to probably step in, sidestep every once in a while on this, because there were some good points on this that I hope Mrs. Weedman really took on this one, because this is a good article. So happy Pride Month, everybody. Take it away for the LGBTQ+.
Yes. So this article is talking about inclusivity and supporting the growing cannabis industry. So we know that LGBTQ Pride Month is June, right? And it's great. Like, a lot of companies are going to do promotions for the month of June. But what about when June's over. I mean, LGBTQ is still a community. They're not just a community for the month of June, right? And so is there really a balance in that? Do they feel like they're included, or do they feel like it's just temporary support to boost sales? So when retailers put away their rainbow flags and pride marketing materials, some consumers are left feeling that the effort is more for a summer sale boost than a true expression of inclusivity. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good here. We're going to try that again. Though from a business perspective, a targeting, it makes sense. In 2019, the community had an estimated annual buying power of $917 billion, according to the National LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce. But does it make sense as an ally? So, I mean, really, okay, yeah, business perspective. You've got this huge buyer pool, right? And so you market to them for the month of June. But really, are you changing anything? Are you really, truly supporting that community?
Is it about the dollars or is it about the cause?
Right. A 2018 Grindr survey showed that a little over 15% of community members felt very positively toward brands using Pride Month marketing, although favorability upticked to 40% for brands using LGBTQ marketing year-round. So where does LGBTQ inclusion stand in the industry today? Like other minorities, the lack of LGBTQ inclusion has been a concern for years, with momentum gaining traction in recent years, but the lack of representation can be glaring when considering history. The gay rights movement, as it was known in the 1970s, served as a central community in the advancement of medical marijuana. San Francisco's Mary Jane Rathbun, better known as Brownie Mary.
Woohoo!
Yep, we've talked about her a lot.
We love Brownie Mary.
Yep. She helped scores of local citizens with her famous pot brownies, and that mostly included people suffering with HIV and AIDS. Kyle Porter, CEO of cannabis PR and marketing firm CMW Media, says he can think of just a few LGBTQ-focused cannabis brands. Porter, who is gay, said that is the outcome of a predominantly straight, white, male-dominated industry. In previous years, Porter has had trouble finding attendees for LGBTQ cannabis events. We tried to hold an LGBTQ event at MJ Biz 2 years ago, and like 30 people showed up, he recalled. Porter and others have seen progress in recent years. He said, LGBTQ acceptance is growing in cannabis and beyond. But being LGBTQ in a boardroom, either pitching for money or representing a company, historically was not beneficial. Napa Valley Fumes CMO Ian Hackett also reported seeing more diversity as companies expand beyond one plant function. Hackett, a member of the LGBTQ community, reported seeing some representation in companies that have expanded beyond cultivation, but diversity as a whole is lacking across the industry. Hackett emphasized the importance of diversity hiring, seeking talent outside their networks. As with all emerging industries, there is a small degree of separation when hiring, as many companies hire folks they know, which usually limits diversity, he said. The commercialization of queer culture is often a point of debate when discussing pride. Laganja Estranja, a prominent pro-cannabis advocate and LGBTQ entertainer, said the industry is doing more each day to support the queer community through visibility and financial efforts. While the steps may be small and mostly taken during Pride Month, we are absolutely headed in the right direction, Estranja said. Still, she'd like to see more. I would like to see more queer people in leadership roles for our pride to be celebrated 24/7, not just during the month of June. Year-round, small steps can include pride imagery or scenes of queer couples in marketing materials. Estranja has worked with various cannabis companies, including mouthpiece creator Moose Labs. The company runs a year-round Colors for a Cause initiative that donates 10% of sales of designated mouthpieces to specific organizations. They recently rolled out a rainbow mouthpiece that is available all year, with the proceeds going to the suicide prevention organization, the Trevor Project. Porter admitted that pride branding is a critical issue and ultimately is happy to have a representation of any form. He said, bottom line, I think most gay people, at least those 30 years and old and up, would agree. We spent so long in the shadows, underrepresented, or even discriminated against. Seeing a brand embrace pride is a win. A growing number of cannabis brands are taking up varied year-round efforts. Jennifer Dooley, Chief Strategy Officer for Green Thumb Industries, highlighted several company efforts, which include the Frank's Friends initiative that offers 50% discounts on medical cannabis for patients with HIV or AIDS. The company also seeks to preserve the historical bonds between cannabis and the LGBT community by highlighting advocates like Dennis Perron and Gilbert Baker. Then there's Dip Devices, which is a portable dab rig. They donate a portion of their proceeds to the Trevor Project, and that is an award-winning film that then led into the national organization providing crisis intervention and suicide prevention services to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning young people under 25. So that's pretty cool. They're donating to them. Jeffrey Zucker of Green Lion Partners. They are taking year-round efforts by working with LGBTQ models, photographers, and influencers. He said, we received a small bit of negative feedback because of that support, but we see that as an opportunity to reinforce the importance of inclusivity. So it's pretty cool. There's some pretty substantial companies out there trying to lead the way and doing more to support the community outside of the month of June.
So that's great. Pretty cool. Great to hear.
Yeah.
As it is Pride Month all month, and not just the month of June, but Pride every day, you know? So that was a great article. I just, when I was reading it and going over it with you and then just looking at it, I just kept on thinking, is it just June?
Right.
It's great to hear that there's more companies all year rounding it, giving back, you know, fighting for, like, I would just say the injustices of what's happened to the LGBTQ forever, you know?
Actually, I have a disheartening story from this week. I was bringing some garbage out to the curb, and as I was approaching the end of our driveway, some kids were crossing the driveway, and it was two girls and a boy. They were probably about 12 or 13, and they were having a pretty involved conversation, and the girl was talking, and she said she was making, like, some sort of reference to, like, a boy or a girl. If she wants to be a boy, you know, that's fine. As long as she knows she's going to burn in hell, I mean, the choice is up to her.
Oof.
And I was like, whoa. Oof. And then they saw me, and they were kind of like, oh, and, like, they tapped each other on the arm, like, be quiet, be quiet. And I was like, wow. So somewhere in their lives they're being taught that because it's not just the simplicity of a man and a woman. Maybe it's someone that is bisexual or in a mixed gender or a binary or a lesbian or a gay relationship. They're going to burn in hell.
Ugh.
Ah, I Ugh. Just couldn't even believe that, like, it just was just awful to hear. I was just so sad.
Whoever taught them that, or whatever church or whatever book they read that they came out of, man, that is just so wrong.
It was so sad.
So wrong to teach kids that, and just to get that stuck in their head. It's just awful. I mean, a human being is a human being.
So for those of you that are in that struggle, maybe someone in your family feels that way, or someone that is important to you feels that way, or someone you work with, and you have to deal with this on a regular, or you've dealt with it, or you are dealing with it, whatever, you know, if I could say for more than myself, we're sorry. And we hope things get better. I hope that I could say that for many. I think there's a lot of good people out there.
Just want to give you a hug.
Hugs. Hugs, hugs. So, moving on. What you got, Mr. Weedman?
A young man, Jonathan Wall, a 26-year-old Maryland native, has been locked up in Baltimore Maximum Security Prison for nearly a year as he awaits trial on federal cannabis conspiracy charges. Prosecutors say Wall, along with 10 others, transferred over 1,000 kilograms of cannabis from California to Maryland over 2 years. If convicted, he can face a sentence up to 15 years in federal prison. Wall told insiders he simply saw an opportunity to make a living. After dropping out of high school and spending some time couch surfing, he moved to California 6 years ago to join a growing cannabis industry he'd felt passionate about since he was a teenager. There are so many people who dedicated and essentially donated their life to getting this plant to where it is today, on the verge of legalization, Wall told Insider by phone from a destination detention facility. Do I have to be the last person who was prosecuted for the product that makes billions of dollars around the world? And that's a good point. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not lying. Inconsistent cannabis laws between the states and on the federal level can land offenders in prison for years, even as some entrepreneurs stand up, make millions working legally in the same industry. Drug policy experts told Insider that if cannabis isn't legalized nationwide, people like Wall will continue to languish in the described as a gray area of the law. Also, those 40,000 other prisoners. Some good news, though. I read today, though, also the DA in the Bronx is canceling out 6,000 low-level cannabis crimes, like wiping them out off their records. That's pretty good. But this young man, when he was getting caught, while he ran to Guatemala for a while, and then came back, and turned himself in, boarded a flight, and he, coming off the tarmac, it was ridiculous how they brought on the whole military platoon to apprehend him, he said, when he landed. They knew I was coming, and I understood the process of what would happen, and they still thought it was necessary to bring the Customs and Border Patrol, the DEA, and U.S. Marshals, and all these different agencies. The dude was turning himself in. He had nothing on him, and he was on a plane, so he got checked to see if he had any guns on him, and they still brought the cavalry. Jesus. So, as we talk about all the time, as, you know, nonviolent cannabis victims, this is just another person out there that's just getting busted for cannabis and what is being now sold legally across many estates, medical or recreational. Getting caught in the gray area, there's a growing acceptance of legal cannabis in the United States. As of November 2020, 35 states in Washington, D.C. had passed a vote to pass medical cannabis access laws, while 15 states in Washington, D.C. had passed and voted to pass recreational cannabis access law, but the drug remains illegal at the federal level. So, Queen Adusuye, the policy manager at Drug Policy Alliance, which works to advance policies that limits the harms of drug use and prohibition, told Insider that Wall's case shows why cannabis needs to be descheduled on the federal level. People should not be in cages because of cannabis. He told the Insider, it's odd to have people sitting in cages because of cannabis, while plenty of people are making a great profit in the cannabis industry, and the industry itself is going to be valued in the billions of dollars as reform continues to progress. A majority of people impacted by cannabis laws enter the criminal justice system on state charges for possession or sale of they call drug, but violations of federal cannabis law often carry harsher penalties, according to Adusuye. She said it's important for drug policy advocates to continue to fight for legalization on the state level, but until it's removed from the controlled substance list, people are going to be caught up in the in-betweens, in the gray area, and we're in because of the discrepancy between state laws and federal law. Right now, there is profound inconsistency in the country, they said. You go to court in Maryland, and just 40 miles down the road, you got 7,200 square foot warehouse that is rented out for the next 20 years because someone was smart enough to buy it and convert it into a pot grow and rent it out. Maryland allows medical cannabis, but recreational weed use and sales remain illegal in the state. Not for long. Flores Williams filed a motion in federal court arguing the prosecuting Wall is unconstitutional because every citizen should have equal rights under the law, but a judge denied it. The U.S. Attorney Office for the District of Maryland did not return the message to speak on Wall's case. So, this poor young man's probably going to sit in jail for some time. So, there's probably some relief efforts for him, and his lawyers are fighting for it. But, yo, Mr. Wall, hopefully you get out of this. We'll see what happens. A 74 greenhouse worth over $50 million was bulldozed in largest illegal grow bust in LA County's history. I saw the pictures online.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Somebody, crazy. Yeah, there were some people posting it out in California and taking pictures of it, and this thing was massive. 74 greenhouses, and they weren't small.
Whoa.
They were pretty big. I mean, $50 million. It was the I mean, they made 23 arrests. It was the largest ever in history. If you haven't seen it, it was incredible. But I mean, they tore this shit down. I mean, just crazy.
Were the buildings like super spread apart with trees around them or something?
No, it was like out in the desert, like in between like mountain ranges. It was all sand around them and shit. It was pretty massive.
Were they like camouflaged into the landscape?
No.
Somebody, how long have they been operating?
Somebody ratted them out. But also, a lot of water was being transported there.
Yeah, right.
In California right now, they're arresting people for like buying water illegally. But from what I read, it's people that own wells on their property selling it to cannabis growers and stuff like that. So it's just crazy in California right now. And the water is pretty bad right now out there. So the drought, so it's just going to be... I mean, they used 150 million gallons of water on that.
For the fires?
No, for that grow op.
Shoot. Yeah, that could put out a lot of fires.
Yeah. What is CBG and how does it combat antibiotic resistance? We talked about CBGV last time or CBDV last time. This time we're talking about CBG. We've talked about CBN and we've talked about these cannabinoids before, but as I do more research on them, I just want to make sure you guys are updated on new stuff that they find with all these cannabinoids. The threat of antibiotic resistance is one of the many global health challenges that will be solved with the chemical compound in the cannabis plant. One of the most prevalent threats to human beings that have become a global health challenge is drug-resistant infections. This threat increases fears that there is high possibility of our generation returning to the pre-antibiotic age because such diseases are life-threatening. Over 700,000 people are dying from drug-resistant infections yearly. This number increases daily, and it has put scientists and researchers on the quest for new antibiotics that will target superbugs. What is cannabigerial? CBG is a form of cannabinoid from cannabis plants and often called the mother of all cannabinoids. Cannabigerial. I probably butchered that, sorry. An extraordinary place in the heart of cannabis researchers and users because other cannabinoids are derived from its acid. CBG is also found in smaller quantities than other cannabinoids in the cannabis plant and is the most plant strains. You will find 1% of CBD, unlike 20 to 30% of THC in the plant. So products gotten from CBG are rare and very expensive. Researchers have found that CBG has many benefits to offer the medicinal world, which has increased popularity. What are antibiotics? Antibiotics are drugs created to prevent and cure bacterial infections, thus saving people from dying when the infection spreads without a cure. But antibiotics are also under severe threat because of the availability of different types of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. These bacteria, which overcome the effects of even the most potent antibiotic, are a problem that has caused the pharmaceutical industry to become stagnated with the creation of new antibiotics. Alongside climate change, the antibiotic resistance crisis is also seen as a global threat. I've read about that, about antibiotics and superbugs and antibiotics. Like, you shouldn't take them all the time because your body gets used to them. But I don't know. We'll see what this article says about CBG. How can cannabigerial help? As researchers carried out tests for a solution to this threat, it was discovered that natural ingredients in cannabis could proffer a solution to the crisis. According to a recent study, CBG was identified as a chemical from the cannabis plant that can kill stubborn bacteria. The antibacterial activities of cannabinoids, which are chemicals in cannabis, effectively suppress and fight off this group of bacteria. The research carried out by the MacMaster microbiologist Dr. Omar L. Halfway and Dr. Maya Farah maintain the scientists need to rethink new ways of discovering the next antibiotic. With all the focus on CBG, it is evident that the cannabinoid is the future. The cannabinoid is also an attractive research area with tremendous potential for long-term solutions for this crisis. Therefore, scientists and academia hope that this discovery will raise more antimicrobial investigations into the possibilities of cannabinoids. CBG was proven to effectively kill both the normal bacteria cells and other persister cells that showed excellent resistance to antibiotics. CBG was also effective with preventing and disrupting biofilms, which cause buildup on the person's skin. Although these test results are preliminary, there is a very high potential for additional findings and further studies. A powerful solution can come from CBG. The power of CBG in cannabis plants. For decades, researchers have agreed that cannabinoids, particularly CBG, have antibacterial properties. For instance, since the 1950s, cannabis extracts have been used as antiseptics in many parts of the world. This realization confirms that the cannabinoids still have a lot of untapped potential for antimicrobial development. The drug properties in cannabinoids are also helpful in the human body, making them a good starting point for the creation of new antibiotics. The team at McMaster's University tested 18 varieties of cannabinoids and other related molecules against several antibiotic-resistant superbugs. The tested bacteria also included gram-positive bacteria and gram-negative bacteria. While scientists discovered that CBG showed very high promise as antibacterial agent. Researchers also collected different antibiotic-resistant bacteria from local hospitals to observe if the cannabinoids killed the bacteria. They immediately realized that CBG has a unique and extraordinary antibacterial activity against other bacteria groups during the experiments. Their discovery also revealed that CBG is a non-psychoactive, non-sedative chemical, excellent for antibiotic development for both animals and human beings. Interestingly, unlike other cannabinoids such as THC, you cannot get high from CBG.
Hmm.
So, like we've talked about in other prior episodes about having that plant with all the cannabinoids in it. Probably why CBG is so expensive is because it's been bred out of the plant. So it's probably you have to breed a plant specifically for that. You're baked. Mm-hmm. I can tell. Another thing is that many antibiotics are ineffective against E. coli. Because the antibiotics inhibited to get to the bacterium cells. CBG alone couldn't kill E. coli, but when it was maximized with a combination with another antibiotic like polymyxin B, the E. coli membrane became easily penetrable.
Whoa.
That was pretty cool.
They got it stoned.
Yeah.
sure, I'll take some.
with the penetration of CBG gains entry into the E. coli and kills the bacterium. So the cannabis plant has given a miracle through CBG, and so many health experts are so excited about this breakthrough. This will be bring on a global scale, but it will take time before it's commercially available, and it needs to go through rigorous CBG safety tests and preclinical development trials.
That's crazy. Because sometimes I think back, like, okay, so they had that study at the University of Mississippi for a gazillion years,
right?
But they didn't really evaluate what the plant could do for you positively. They were so focused on it being psychotropic, right? And those effects.
I'm sure.
But they didn't look at it medically.
No, but I'm sure they, I mean, unlike.
They got to have details.
Unlike
we don't
Dr.
Know.
McCellum, who looked at the plant right. as a medicine and looked at the cannabinoids and discovered and found out what those cannabinoids mm-hmm. did. The University of Mississippi grew the plant for basically government experiment to find out what was really truly about this plant, but never really looked at the medical benefits
right.
of it.
They never they recognized studied, the cannabinoids.
Right. They just probably.
And terpenes.
Right. And if they did, they have it written down somewhere in a bunch of notebooks.
We just don't know
and
yet.
Ain't sharing it.
They've got to have so much.
So much information.
There had to have been like a few scientists that were like, dude, we're going to smoke a different strain every night and we're going to write some shit down. Those are the notes we want to see.
That's 100%. So, yeah. Normalizing cannabis in homes.
Yeah. It's a thing, right? And we're going
to
talk about.
We talked about the children's book last time.
Yep.
That's normalizing cannabis in the home.
It's an effort, right? So we're going to talk about a woman who is making great efforts to normalize cannabis in homes and get equity baked into the laws. Baked. It's about making sure there's actually a pathway for people who have been in the illicit market to actually get to be part of the real market, Chanel Lindsay said. Chanel first started using cannabis at 17 to treat a cyst, she said. I had just gotten it drained, and I remember after I smoked, all of the pain went away, and I didn't really think much of it at that point because it was just a one-time thing with a cyst. But cysts run in Lindsay's family, she said, and when her son was born 2 years later and she developed a postpartum ovarian cyst, she sought out cannabis for medicinal use. It was still illegal at the time, and even quality recreational cannabis was hard to find. Not all cannabis is created the same. The stuff that you're going to get on the street is probably filled with pesticides, and it just isn't good quality, she said. And I'm using this to actually treat my medical condition. So for me, it became super important to have cannabis I could trust and know was grown organically. Lindsay, 39, has spent the last decade growing cannabis and testing different strains and forms to determine what works best for both medicinal and recreational purposes. Those efforts have led her to helm a Boston company that sells the country's first all-in-one cannabis cooker, a kitchen appliance designed to activate and prepare cannabis for baking, melting, and infusing. She is one of few Black women to lead a company in the multi-billion-dollar cannabis industry. As of 2017.
Good for her.
I know, right? As of 2017, the most recent year for which data is available, 81% of cannabis business owners are founders or founders were white. 81% were white. 4% were black. And 6% were Hispanic, according to Marijuana Business Daily. A lack of accessible capital, systemic economic racism, and laws barring convicted offenders from joining the legal industry limit who can participate in its rapid growing economy. Lindsay has watched the societal shift and barriers to entry up close as a lawyer and business owner who fights for equity in the industry, and as someone who has been arrested on drug possession charges. Lindsay was arrested in 2009 in Massachusetts after officers seized less than 1 ounce of marijuana, the police report said. At the time, cannabis was illegal in the state, but marijuana offenses of less than 1 ounce did not carry criminal penalties, so Lindsay didn't have to serve any jail time. When I was arrested, my whole legal career flashed in front of my eyes, said Lindsay, who attended Northeastern University School of Law and specialized in business, employment, and insurance matters for pursuing cannabis law before pursuing cannabis law full time. If I was publicly brought into Stoughton District Court and arraigned, I would have lost my job. I would have lost everything. At the time, Lindsay worked as an attorney at a firm in Boston, and she realized that then she wanted to change the stigma around marijuana and reduce personal and professional hurdles for people who wanted to use it but were fearful of retaliation at work or getting arrested. There was a light bulb moment that happened, Lindsay said. I was just like, how can I continue on with this? I'm a person who uses cannabis for health and recreational reasons. How can my professional life be in such conflict with what's happening in my personal life, even though I have such skill in both? It wasn't something I was going to give up. It really was helping me. As more states move to legalize marijuana, Lindsay said laws often do not include expunging records or releasing people incarcerated on marijuana arrests, and there's no clear path for how they can join the legal market. When legalization happens, people who have been marginalized get completely pushed to the side. It becomes a money game. There's a lot of money to be made here. And the forces that have made the money, they know how to get into the city, into different states, and make those processes happen, Lindsay said. And so for us, it's about making sure that there's actually a pathway for people who have been in the illicit market to actually get into becoming part of the real market. Because if that doesn't happen, it will continue to criminalize us and continue to have the same disparate impact while adding the incredible insult to injury at the same time other people are making millions off of it. Lindsay's efforts to make the industry more equitable include working with a group of lawyers in 2015 to draft a ballot initiative to legalize marijuana in Massachusetts. The measure passed in 2016. Adam Fine, a partner at Vincent Sederberg, a cannabis law firm, worked with Lindsay on the ballot initiative. Marijuana arrests and incarcerations and all the collateral consequences, Chanel really highlighted that issue in an extraordinarily effective way, Fine said. It was a large effort, and she was absolutely critical to that effort. The vision that she had for the law, the actual boots on the ground, speaking to the press, highlighting the different impacts that prohibition has caused and the harm that it has caused. Lindsay launched Ardent in 2016. It sells two devices, Nova and FX, that activate marijuana plants before infusing, cooking, and baking.
That's dope.
Mm-hmm. The company refers to the FX model as the Easy Bake Ardent. Users can choose which strains or oils to include for whatever outcome they want, including rolls, topicals, or edibles. In addition to cannabis, the appliance can also cook soup, pasta, and pastries.
Damn.
Pretty cool. Startup capital for the company came from Lindsay's mom, who invested her retirement savings of nearly $200,000. Lindsay secured other investments and got Ardent off the ground with a total of $500,000. But outside investors have been few, she said. There were companies that I saw literally get $6 million for an idea of a product that never even made it to market. And I'm like, damn, I can't even get you guys to give me a couple hundred thousand to set up, Lindsay said. It makes you build an incredibly scrappy business. I'm not waiting on investors anymore. We're just going to run this company lean. We're going to be profitable from the beginning. My company's been profiting since year two.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Despite the venture's success, Lindsay says her priority is bringing more people from underrepresented groups into the multi-billion dollar cannabis industry. She co-founded a nonprofit called Equitable Opportunities Now to push equitable applications of existing laws and new ones. This year, the nonprofit and local activists organized a boycott and social media campaign against members of the Commonwealth Dispensary Association, a trade group representing brick-and-mortar companies, to defund a regulation aimed at bringing historically underrepresented minorities into the industry. The regulation implemented by the Cannabis Control Commission, Massachusetts' governing body for marijuana, permits delivery service in which drivers pick up products from businesses and deliver it to customers, and allows recreational marijuana retailers without storefronts to make deliveries. Lindsay said that when it comes to the future of cannabis, the number one key component is making sure that equity is baked into the laws. That's incredibly important because you can't go after the law has been written and then try to fight for a seat at the table. And you can see, even when it was put into the law, every single year now, we've had to fight over each little piece of it to make sure it gets implemented, she added. So right now, what I'm doing is continuing to use my voice to show the inequities within the industry. So pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smart woman making some changes,
not
trying to make
no
a difference.
From nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it her way and on her own.
Yep.
Don't take no money from nobody. You got this.
Yep.
Schumer is learning he doesn't have what it takes to legalize marijuana.
Hmm.
Cannabis. I could have told him that.
Why doesn't he?
Because he doesn't have the people on his side.
Shoot.
A lot of moderates on both sides aren't with it.
Hmm.
He's just going to have to go across the table and try to get some stuff done, but I could have told you that. I mean, he came out swinging, you know, but we'll see. He needs a little more help. I mean, he needs to get, like, people who said they were going to vote for it or press it through to fight with him.
Right.
So we'll see. Wyoming, who we don't talk much about on this show because they really haven't put anything on the docket, but activists and file 2022 cannabis decriminalization and medical cannabis ballot measures. Pretty sweet. Hell yeah. Go Wyoming. Let's do it. Texas and Louisiana governors signal they'll sign cannabis reform bills on their desk. Not soon enough. Let's do this. Let's go. California uses cannabis tax revenue to fund programs to repair drug war harms. Cool. Good for that. That's where that tax money should go. And then San Francisco gives green light to social use lounges.
Oh, cool.
Need to open them up across the country. People need a place to smoke and socialize and relax and be able to, like, we have an idea, but we ain't telling you about it. Maybe one day it'll happen. Virginia unveils new cannabis legalization website. Here's what's legal and what isn't starting July 1st. Adults 21 years and older will be allowed to possess not more than 1 ounce of cannabis for personal use. That's not bad. Adults 21 years and older will be allowed to use cannabis in private residences. However, nothing prohibits the owner of a private residence from restricting the use of cannabis on its premise. Adults 21 and over will also be allowed to grow up to 4 plants now per household. We read it last time. It was only 2. Plants per household, not per person, so just 4. Just like Illinois, we only get 5. According to specific requirements, home cultivation. Adults sharing or transferring 1 ounce or less of cannabis between person who are 21 years or older without rumination, I don't know, will be legal. Adult sharing does not include instances in which cannabis is given away with another transaction between the same parties. A gift of cannabis is offered or advertised in conjunction with an offer for the sale of goods or services. A gift of cannabis is contingent upon separate reciprocal transactions for goods or services. It will remain illegal for anyone to possess more than 1 ounce of cannabis. Hmm. Individuals found guilty of possessing more than 1 ounce, but not more than 1 pound of cannabis are subject to civil penalty of not more than $25. Oh. Okay.
It's like a little fine.
All right.
A little slap on the hand.
Pay me I'll pay that $25 extra a month.
You could have up to an ounce for $25 a month.
Over an ounce.
Over an ounce?
Over an ounce. Wow. If you get caught, yeah. Individuals found guilty of possessing more than 1 pound are subject to a felony, though.
Oh.
So be careful. So in between an ounce and a pound, it's only $25. It'll remain.
Double check that.
Yeah. No, it's what it says.
Yeah?
Yeah. It will remain illegal for anyone under 21 to consume, purchase, or possess cannabis or attempt to consume, purchase, or possess any amount of cannabis. It will remain illegal to distribute, sell cannabis, to possess any amount of cannabis with the intent to distribute or sell it. So no illegal sales. Existing safety measures remain in place, including prohibiting use of cannabis while driving a motor vehicle or while being a passenger in a motor vehicle. Possession of cannabis on school grounds while operating a school bus in a motor vehicle transporting passenger for hire or in a commercial vehicle. So, I mean, you got it. Four plants, man. Start growing, you know. Nurses, we need them. I've always been told nurses work harder than doctors. Is that true?
Well, thankfully, I haven't had a lot of medical interactions, like hospital stays or anything like that. But I feel like when I visited family in the hospital, you always see the nurses.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And they're just relaying all of the data back to the doctors. Not saying just, like the doctors aren't important, but the nurses are really there engaging with you a lot. So, guess what? There's a new kind of nurse in town.
Tell me about that kind of nurse.
You've heard about Nurse Ratchet, right? Well, meet Nurse Reefer. Ha ha.
That's catchy.
I know.
Very catchy.
Yep. The term cannabis nurse has emerged recently to describe a new and growing career field in the cannabis industry. Typically, it refers to registered nurses who have become experts on using medical cannabis to treat a variety of ailments. Customers might find a cannabis nurse on staff at their local dispensary. Other cannabis nurses have formed their own consulting companies to help patients who have nowhere to turn for authoritative information on the use of cannabis. The popularity of the nursing field has led to the creation of the American Cannabis Nurse Association, the ACNA, which works to advance excellence in cannabis nursing practice through advocacy, collaboration, education, research, and policy development. The ACNA was founded in Oregon in 2010. It received tax-exempt status in 2015 and elected its first board of directors in 2016. Its growth follows the expansion of medical cannabis legalization state by state in the last decade. According to the association, 49 states now have medical cannabis programs. The ACNA works to help cannabis nurses better understand the laws in their state and to influence in positive ways the importance of medical cannabis and to shepherd its acceptance into mainstream medicine. That includes dispelling misinformation and cannabis myths that can confuse patients. Dee Dee Cully, a nurse in Missouri, provides an example of how fast the cannabis nurse profession has grown. A registered nurse, Cully told Greenway, a magazine for the Missouri cannabis industry, that she became interested in cannabis after researching its use to deal with chronic pain and anxiety issues, and her husband as he battles cancer. "We didn't go looking for cannabis. Cannabis found us," Cully said. Her company, Two Leaf Nurses, consults with dispensaries on providing customers accurate information on the medical use of cannabis. Cully also said she has moved into telehealth to advise patients directly and is working on a four-part program for the Missouri Nurses Association to educate clinicians on medical cannabis. Greenway also featured one cannabis nurse who runs her own CBD store and another who owns a consulting company that works directly with patients and trains dispensary staff to advise on medical cannabis. Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Another example comes from Michigan, where the recently opened Hayat Provisioning Dispensary in Oakland County, north of Detroit, has contracted with a nurse to work on staff, according to the Daily Detroit News. Kathleen Graham runs a company called Cannabis Nurse, which offers medical cannabis counseling and wellness plans. Graham will offer wellness plans that include diet, lifestyle, and cannabinoid support. She told the Daily Detroit News, "It is especially important to me and all of our staff that we provide patients with a welcoming, confidential, and non-judgmental space to share the journey that led them to seek cannabis as an option. That attitude, backed by extensive experience and education in nursing, has made Cannabis Nurse popular among cannabis consumers across the country. It also offers entrepreneurial nurses with an interest in cannabis an avenue to break into the growing industry." I think that's super cool.
I think it's dope.
Yeah. Very neat.
Yeah. I just like hearing people starting businesses and
getting creative and finding an opportunity. But
right. It's in cannabis, but you might not be selling the plants, but you're doing other things to start a business.
Encourage and support cannabis. Yeah. And
I think it's so cool.
Its importance.
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, you might not be able to start a dispensary right now. You might not be able to start a cultivation because of high, but there's always an opportunity to do something in an industry that you're passionate about. I mean, Mr. and Mrs. Weedman don't have the kind of money to start a dispensary in Illinois.
Heck no.
Or a cultivation.
No.
So we love cannabis and we want to be a part of the industry. So we decided to do something that we were going to be good at. And pivoted, like we talked about before. And I love hearing that the one woman about the baked stuff was great. The one article you just read. I mean, it's just great. And like I've said, seeing moms or if they're just women get in an industry that they can grow themselves and not have to, you know, just go out there and fucking do it. It's just awesome. So proud of you. Go, women, go. Gonna rule the world one day. International news, illegal cannabis often contaminated with pesticides, British Columbia study finds. The British Columbian government is warning cannabis buyers to avoid illegal grown products after a pilot study found most samples from unlicensed sources were contaminated with fungicides and other hazardous substances. The samples were taken and seized by British Columbia police, and they got this illegal cannabis and they did all these tests. A total of 20 samples from 6 illicit storefronts from Metro Vancouver were collected in February and tested, and 18 of them were contaminated with pesticides. So just be careful out there. We've talked about it. I'm not dissing plugs and, you know, any of that. Some people can only afford to get it from their plug, so I understand that. But you just, like I've said, you have to know where it's coming from. And I know sometimes dispensary prices are high. Taxes on dispensary prices are high. You know, I get it. But just be careful and try to find out where it's coming from the best you can. You know, you got to protect yourself. Smoking all that shit isn't good for your lungs and your body. Here's something crazy. Everyone thought they'd be celebrating the legalization of recreational cannabis in Mexico, which should be the largest country right now selling cannabis. I think 130 million people live in that country. Be the largest in the world, and there's still we were talking about a month ago that cannabis was going to be legal, you know, but this the Senate and everything that's going on right now, that it's still not on the fucking legal. It's crazy. Mexico. Scotland's first patient prescribed legal cannabis happened this month. Along with that, people are pissed because only one person got signed and they're all waiting, all these chronic pain people that's on the list still haven't gotten their treatment yet, and they're waiting on
let their first patient get it, and then nobody else can get it.
There's a waiting list and a log jam right now.
So only one guy gets it.
Yeah, crazy.
Patient A.
Luxembourg moves one step closer to cannabis legalization. Good for you. I mean, that's huge. I mean, full legalization. Not even wasting any time. I mean, good for you, Luxembourg. I know. Breaking news. That I read this week, Brazil moves toward cannabis legalization. Another huge country, just gangbusters. The Chamber of Deputies did a special commission, very narrowly approved a bill authorizing cannabis cultivation for medicinal, veterinarian, scientific, and industrial use. Government supporters tried their best to prevent the legalization from heading to the upper house for final approval, of course.
I wonder if they're going to start growing hemp, since they specifically said industrial use.
They can grow everything there.
They can be a big...
Yeah,
hemp
huge,
producer.
Huge. So good for you, Brazil. Go get you some. in Manila, Philippines, the Philippine National Police, which we've talked about, that country being very against any drug, especially cannabis, along with the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency, destroyed a total of 2.8 million worth of cannabis plants in a two-day operation in Tingalan, Kalinga Province.
Do you know for a moment Duterte is their president? And he came in and he just declared, like, hands-on law. Like, if you walk outside your door and you see a drug deal going on, you can kill that guy. Literally.
Yep.
And that was it. So there were just, people would wake up with just dead bodies all over the streets.
Yep.
For weeks. I think even months that was happening.
Yeah.
But that stopped, right?
I don't know.
I don't think I'd smoke a joint there. Like, you don't
beautiful
even
country.
Want
I'd love yeah. to see it one day, but oh I'd rather gosh. Go there when cannabis is legal.
Don't they have like 11,000 islands off the coast?
It's something like that. Yeah,
amazing. Like it's that. Beautiful there. Well, I've never been, but it looks beautiful there. Yeah,
NCB cracks.
Just don't
down.
Smoke weed there.
No, don't do any drugs there.
No.
NCB cracks down on Mumbai bakery making pot brownies.
Oops.
Edibles in that country and Mumbai. Edibles are huge right now. The young adults love edibles, and it's illegal there. So It's crazy that they're making big bust. The Narcotics Control Bureau there has seized cannabis, around 830 grams of weed cakes, from a bakery in suburban Malad, and arrested three people, including a woman in his connection. Nuts. It was the first in such case in India where an edible weed was used for baking cakes. Well, they have the bang shops there, so I don't know. You allow that. Allow edibles.
Maybe understand. They're concerned it would affect the economy of bang.
Ah, come on.
Is that a big?
Bang's been around forever there.
I know. So. Like, a lot of people consume it, right?
Yeah. I don't know how many, but a lot do from what I read in past episodes, you know. So they're just trying to stop the edibles. Man. Crazy. I don't understand it. You allow that wonderful drink.
Maybe they can get on board with Alabama and allow suppositories.
I have no idea. It's just, I don't understand. I just don't. We love Bob Marley.
We do.
Oh, God, do we love
wish
Bob
I
Marley.
Actually knew him. We I say that like we're buddies with
I
him.
I wish we actually gotten to
could
see
you
him
imagine?
Just once. But the Bob Marley Museum in Jamaica is getting a cannabis retail store.
Oh, cool.
That's pretty awesome. So I love his, you know, all the stuff you read about him and ganja and stuff like that. And, you know, so that's pretty cool. I'm excited about that. So if we ever get to go to Jamaica, I'd love to see it. Would you ever want a weed mansion?
Well, yeah, but I'll tell you, this article I'm going to read.
It's been all over the news. I've read it, and it's been on the news. It's crazy. But I'm just saying, though, would you ever want a weed mansion?
Well, my first question was, when we talked about this earlier today, it was, what is a weed mansion? And I was like, what are you even talking about? So my immediate visual in my brain was like building a structure that just had like weed shrubs out in front. Like everything would be cannabis. Inside, you'd have cannabis wallpaper, and then you'd have real cannabis growing, and you'd have a garden of cannabis out back.
And the place was built with hemp and everything.
Like,
you know.
Yeah, all natural fibers right. on your right. fabrics and
the
things
fucking
like
house
that.
Is dope.
Yeah, like, think like a Florida plantation-style home with, like, big windows and flowy and fabric.
12-foot.
And just weed plants
12-foot
everywhere.
12-foot weed plants all around.
Yeah, like, pretty cool. Well, anyway, there is a... They're calling it a marijuana mansion. So there's like even like a little oops, because it really, if you were with the times, you'd call it a cannabis mansion, 100%. Right?
Or you can, I mean, anything but.
Anything but.
They spelt it right, though. At least they didn't
right,
put the
whatever.
H in there.
So they put it. So this former marijuana mansion was built as a high-end paradise, and it sold for $44 million.
This house was fucking right. amazing.
Okay, so I'm going to try to set the visual bar
you
here.
Hold on. Let's yeah. explain why. I gave you this to do. You are a house connoisseur.
I love architecture.
You do. So this and why
interior design.
Whether or not this is truly a weed house,
I love
thought
construction.
It was I thought it was special
yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
Because this house was pretty fucking amazing.
So this house is in Brentwood. It's like the hills of Los Angeles. So picture like hillside, mountainside. It's like tucked in. and it's all flat roof, like stacked, like different sized layers of open space, and like inside and outside are all one because it's all like peel back walls, like, and you're outside. Are you inside? I'm outside. I don't know. Where am I? Right. So all these like cool, like stacked layers of this flat house with, you know, 12-foot ceilings, freaking amazing. Like beautiful interior design, kind of like edgy, young, energetic, right? Okay, 50,000 freaking square feet. It's a compound on 1.26 acres. That's not common. LA?
No.
You get a box and the lot's an inch bigger, right? So 50,000 square foot compound in Brentwood, one of LA's five specialized marijuana mansions. So this developer designed and marketed this house with a rooftop pot garden and amenities, focusing on it being a stoner's paradise. However, the cannabis plants were removed prior to closing. Like, what the fuck, Chuck? Because the new owner didn't want them. So then I'm like, well, that's just a freaking gimmick. Like, that was just a like code word, like I'm going to get your attention. Like,
yo, if there's any Chucks out there, Mrs. Weedman's not mad at you. Just so you know.
What the fuck, Chuck? So who isn't going to click on $44 million house, 1.26 acres, L.A., who, and it says marijuana mansion. Everyone's going to like be like, what does that mean? Views all around the world, right?
Boom, boom, boom. The fucking house is amazing.
It's freaking amazing. But I think it was a little bit of a, what is that word? False advertising. There were six fucking weed plants. You have 50,000 freaking square feet. Six plants. What does that have to do with weed?
But you were supposed to get a bud tender with it too.
Okay, so you get a bud tender and six plants. Give me a fucking break. Really? And like, there should be like the most state of the art grow room in the house, right? A hydroponic grow room.
That's
a
what
soil
I
grow room.
Yeah.
A look see room so you can watch your little pretty buds growing and not
like
bother
I do every
them.
Day.
A cute little trim room.
Yeah.
And then have someone there rolling your fucking joints. No, because that's really part of the process. You want to do that yourself. You don't even need people, right? This is just state-of-the-art shit. That's for $44 million, and you call it a weed house? Let's talk, right? And then up on that deck, you could have some plants to shade you while you're, like, sitting out smoking. And you just smell the freaking... Okay, the house is fucking beautiful. My problem was calling it the marijuana mansion.
I know. I get it 100%.
Right?
So I almost did not give you this.
Because you knew I was going to get mad about it?
Of course, 100%. I almost didn't, but the house, I had to show you the house because this is like...
I'd want a powder room unreal. That had like some like funky like wallpaper with like funky reference to cannabis, Reefer Madness.
The
right?
pool is amazing.
A weed-shaped sink. Just in the like the main... Well, that'd I guess you probably have like... You probably have like five bathrooms on your, what is a main level?
So give us an idea of what you would want your ultimate weed house to really look like.
Well, there'd be weed. Like I just talked about, the whole state of the art. It doesn't have to be like substantial in size, but like a proper grow room for your own supply.
And glass would
You're
be awesome.
Growing six plants at a time and you've got like space for each of the stages. You know, seedling, grow, bud, trim, process, do some baking. Do some storage, a little smoke room, super amazing air quality and water quality in there.
It's got a basketball court.
Yeah, it's got a basketball court. 7 bedrooms, 11 bathrooms. Here's the other thing. Give me more bedrooms than bathrooms. Like who's going to clean 11 bathrooms? I guess you don't when you pay $44
million. No.
Right? But I want more bedrooms because I want people to like have like slumber parties. Like I want... like family to come and hang out, friends come hang out, just stay. Who cares? There's extra rooms, right? 7 bedrooms is not enough when you have that kind of space. But this dude, Jeff Feinberg, former director of Soros Fund Management, was not very enthusiastic about cannabis.
Boo.
But he paid $44 million for that baby. And Ramtin Ray Nostradi is the developer. And he believes that cannabis smoking rooms are going to be the new cigar room. So he built the house with the intention of it being kind of a compound. So the thought is, like, you smoke, you hang, like, you don't ever need to leave your house.
The garage is a 10-car garage, has a barbershop,
yes,
a lounge, and a nine-screen digital wall.
Yeah, I don't even know. There's,
what,
like,
the
I think there's five bars. They've got a vegetable, carrot, cucumber garden.
The
that
roof,
comes with a gardener. What does that mean? There's, like, a little guy that lives up there?
The rooftop.
That's
is
not nice.
But you saw the plants and stuff they had on the rooftop and grass. And
you have a pizza oven, theater.
The theater.
Outdoor movie
the
screen.
The theater was cool because they put smoking stuff in there so you could smoke in the theater. I thought that was pretty cool.
They have a Kobe Bryant-themed basketball court.
Yeah, the basketball court's
You gotta just
amazing.
Search this shit. Just search it. It's pretty crazy.
It's
right?
It's pretty awesome.
But anyway, so my long story short is that very cool, fun, little play on marketing there, little play on words. They call it a marijuana mansion, but the dude who buys it doesn't want marijuana. It would have been cool if there was a little more reference to marijuana.
A lot more
it.
Reference. Like, you need like a mural of Snoop Dogg and all the big players of, and
like,
Bob Marley.
Yeah,
I was like
a lot of other
mural.
Things.
You know,
they should have talked to me. This dude, what's his? What did I say his name is again? The developer. Call me. I'll help you out on the next one.
The little
one.
Cactus like garden he has in the house
that was
pretty
sweet.
Cool. Yeah,
at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. It was an amazing house. To dream build, I love when Mrs. Weedman talks about houses because she makes me dream build of what the house could look like in her mind, and it makes me excited about having a house one day with her letting her build it. Just dream build. It makes you feel good. You know. NFL funds cannabis research as federal prohibition adversely impacts studies into opioid alternative for players. This is big. They're giving like $1 million in grants for research to investigate the therapeutic potential of cannabis, CBD, and other alternatives to opioids for treating pain. NFL stars, I mean, and just players, any sport. This is going to be big, I think, for all sports.
For pain management.
For pain management, they get hooked on opioids. What was the other one too? They put in your, like, when you get hurt, they stick a needle in your knee, and it's supposed to like last like a month. It's a
steroid.
Not a steroid. It's the other one.
Oh yeah. Whatever. I know what
remember.
You're talking about.
You guys know what they give it to you. Cortisone.
Cortisone shots.
And it takes the pain away for like a month, weeks.
But it's
who
awful
knows?
For your body to
it's
break
awful,
down.
It's awful,
right?
You know, and I'm glad the NFL is doing this. I think it's great. I think I mean for these guys to use cannabis as a pain medication. For like I have, you know, chronic concussion syndrome, you know, cannabis is great for that. You know, there's so many things that cannabis can help. And hopefully $1 million is great. NFL, proud of you for doing that. But you can probably give a lot. You could probably
$1 million.
$1 million.
Come it's, on.
I know they could probably
they get paid
give,
more for a commercial.
They could probably give $10 million, $20 million to cannabis research to help their players.
To help
now,
the players that make them their money.
And players that are retired.
Fuck yeah.
And players that are coming down the line in the future. I think the NFL could do more. I think all sports can do more and get them off the opioids and get players off painkillers. So I suggest that all sports companies, you guys are companies, you make money, you should use that money for good and help your players.
So Mr. Notari, the developer in the NFL and the AFL and the National Soccer League, just call us, right? Talk to us first. Connect us to your people.
Just invest it into your players for their future and the future of their families. You know, it could help out a lot of players. You know, can name one, Junior Seau. He committed suicide.
Yep.
He had chronic, you know,
concussion syndrome.
PTSD. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows what that could have done for him. A lot of players. I'm just not just one that just off the top of my head. So
Steve McMichael. From the Chicago Bears.
I don't know McMichael right now, but
he's an advocate.
He's got ALS.
He has ALS.
Yeah.
I feel like I heard that he's an advocate for cannabis,
yes,
medical cannabis.
Yes, he is. But watching that man who was a professional football player for the Chicago 85 Bears, monster of a man, just beast on the football field, professional wrestler with the Four Horsemen.
Big boy.
Just monster of a man. We saw him play in a band.
Mm-hmm. We did a couple of years ago.
Phenomenal athlete, just a great man though too.
With Dan Hampton,
the Dan Hampton band.
Yeah,
it was
fun.
It was a fundraiser. Yeah, so but see him in that wheelchair, looking the way he looks, man, I feel praying for him, man. Hopefully he makes it because he's a good man. So, but that cannabis could have helped him all along. You never know. So, you know, sports companies out there, you know, help your players out. But at least you did something. I can't argue with that.
Right. You know? It's a start.
Yes. Luxury items.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, I don't know anything about luxury.
Yeah, you do.
Not, no.
Yeah, you do. Says the guy who likes to buy fancy shoes.
Fancy shoes. $50 shoes. That's fancy. $40 shoes. I look for shoes on sale.
No, you like to buy quality over quantity.
I do. But I mean, that's to me, I buy quality stuff that lasts. And because I don't go shopping every year, I usually go shoe shopping every 3 years. So I know it's not good, but I'm cheap. So, or frugal, as you call me. So
I don't think it's that habitual. You get them randomly.
Yeah, but I have stages in my shoes. Like
you get to the phase where, like, in 3 years, you're like, okay, these need to go in the garbage.
Right. So, I mean, I've had shoes up to 10 years, and just like, you know, I'm frugal. I don't know what luxury is. I really don't, because I can't afford it. But Mrs. Weedman knows what luxury is. So, and she teaches me. So this is her talk right now on cannabis as a luxury. I mean, I could see it. I mean, who was it? Big John, Little John, the hip hop artist that does that. No, it's not him. That does that show on Vice.
Oh, I love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's his name? It's not Big John or Little John. It's damn it. I don't know. Talk about this.
Two Chainz.
That's it.
Yes.
His show's great.
And then then he'll be with his guest, and the guest brings on this like we're talking $10,000 like luxury cannabis item, and Two Chainz is like, so you brought that for me, right?
Yeah.
Like, and he's like got it on his lap by the time the interview.
But it's all
over.
Cannabis luxury.
And you
stuff.
Can see the person, because they're like a startup company, is like. I want that back. I can't give it. He can't have it. And 2 Chainz is like, yep, thanks.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Pretty fun.
I'm stoned, and yeah. I should have known 2 Chainz. I apologize.
But anyway, the emergence of cannabis as a luxury.
Yes.
So everything has ranges, right? And maybe everything doesn't have the range up to luxury, and everything doesn't have the range down to trashy. But there's always some range. Well, cannabis is really seeing all ranges, I think. I don't think that we've really seen much of the luxury industry in cannabis yet. That's my personal opinion. We see a lot of, like, your college kind of deadhead reference, you know, tie-dye or cartoons, that kind of thing. A lot of that, right?
Yeah,
and
I mean,
products.
Very little luxury. A little bit. I mean, I've seen stuff, like I said, on that show and here and there, but not like
that show is funny. We got to find some episodes of that. Well, there was once, obviously, a time not too long ago when cannabis was banned from polite conversation and avoided by mainstream media. Fast forward to 2021, and cannabis seems to be all that people are talking about. Nearly 1 in 3 Americans now live in a state where cannabis is legal for recreational use. The pandemic has advanced the dissolution of old stigmas, with many states legitimizing cannabis use both as a true therapy for patients and as a revenue builder for depleted budgets. The evolving cannabis landscape is joined by shifts in consumer demographics, demands, and purchasing behaviors. Cannabis consumers are spending roughly 25 to 30% more per purchase today than they did prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, opening doors to introduce higher-priced premium products. Women, who generally desire such products and control trillions in spending power, are the fastest-growing demographic of cannabis consumers. Alcohol is being replaced with cannabis as people increasingly focus on health and wellness, and high-end cannabis services like marijuana sommeliers are now a real thing. That's pretty cool. As public perception of cannabis as a taboo illicit drug, I think I need to back up to that whole marijuana sommeliers. I have to think about that for a minute. Is that
cool? It's just like wine.
Yeah. It's like your bud tender.
It's like the Cicerones for beer.
It's like
for wine.
It's like a level of being a bud tender. You get to like a master bud tender.
Right.
Then you're like a sommelier.
Yes. But I don't like the name.
That. Yeah. Just call it a master bud tender.
Sure.
Right? Keep it simple.
I don't know. Take the sommelier. That's wine.
Yeah. It needs to get its own.
Yes.
Like you're a cannabinoid.
There you go.
A cannabinoider. Cannabinoidito. We'll come up with some names. Maybe someone will listen to us.
Come up with their own name.
Yeah. As public perception of cannabis as a taboo illicit drug melts away, it's turning into a lifestyle. Mainstream businesses and entrepreneurs have entered the market specifically to cater to new cannabis consumers seeking a sophisticated experience more than a high. More and more women are launching female-focused brands to better serve the growing base of female customers. New and existing cannabis consumers are increasingly seeking better quality products. The movement has spurred the development of innovative products and brands taking cues from luxury fashion, hospitality, and food groups, and elevating the entire industry. Unlike in fashion, where luxury is conspicuous, luxury cannabis is rooted in self-care and wellness. But with the added touch of indulgence and self-expression that it sets, that will set it apart from the rest of the industry. This makes it all the more appealing to millennials and Gen Z consumers who have more nuanced relationships with the luxury sector. The pandemic has put health and well-being at the forefront of luxury cannabis, and it is becoming a recognized place for affluent consumers to turn. In 2019, March of 2019, high-end retailer Barney's New York became the first major American department store to introduce a cannabis lifestyle shop with the launch of the High End at its Beverly Hills flagship location. The retail behemoth partnered with upscale cannabis vaporizer and edible pastille brand Bebo to bring the luxury wellness retail concept to life. Jonathan Adler, iconic designer of modern home decor, teamed up with the luxury retailer and cannabis lifestyle brand Higher Standards to design a capsule collection of cannabis-inspired accessories that included glossy trays, catch-alls, and coasters. That stuff was super, super cute if you've ever seen it, or if you haven't. It's always out of stock, though. Others are creating sister brands that meld cannabis with the extravagant lifestyle. Eddie Parker, a high-end collection of vintage-inspired acrylic handbags and home decor, brought their unique aesthetic to cannabis with the launch of Flower by Eddie Parker. Fully merging the worlds of fashion and cannabis, Flower by Eddie Parker offers upscale, colorful smoking accessories and fun cannabis products to the luxury female consumer. Given the lack of cannabis products designed specifically with women in mind, Eddie Parker isn't the only female-forward cannabis brand that has emerged. Her Highness is another such premium purveyor of cannabis couture that brings to market luxury cannabis and THC-infused self-care products inspired by and engineered by women. Celebrities are coming out of the woodwork with their own cannabis brands, elevating the cannabis game with famous personalities. Jay-Z partnered with California-based cannabis company Caliva to create Monogram, another premium cannabis brand. Launched in December 2020, the high-end line includes five different strains of craft indoor-grown cannabis flower and joints, retailing for nearly twice the average at $40 for 2 grams.
Well, last week we talked about him 900,000 pounds and weed ain't one, that's for sure. Shit. Kidding me?
Yeah. Earlier this year, Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg launched Houseplant, a purveyor of custom cannabis strains and artisan home goods and smoking accessories. I know I see Seth Rogen doing pottery and ceramics all the time on Instagram, so I wonder if he's making...
I don't see him do any of that. I see him just smoking big doinks, yeah. But that's just me.
Products in the latter collection, some handmade by Rogan himself, so maybe, range in price from $250 to $350. Beyond physical products, we're also seeing a rise in novel experiences designed for the premium consumer. From cannabis hotels and lounges to art galleries and spas, there's a multitude of cannabis hospitality concepts either underway or already in operation. Humboldt Social and Papa and Barkley unveiled Papa and Barkley Social on 420 of 21, a first-of-its-kind cannabis lounge, day spa, restaurant, and boutique.
They didn't do no damn skunk bust, that's for sure.
No. The concept introduced a new kind of cannabis indulgence, creating a space where locals and tourists alike can browse local swag, smoke high-quality cannabis, grab lunch, and relax with a CBD facial. So getting back to that, Mr. Weedman hosted a few 420 parties on a school bus going from place to place, and it was called the Skunk Bus. And if you were lucky enough to be invited, you're lucky enough to remember what happened there.
Because remember, I don't
only
shit.
If you're there, only if you're there do you know what has happened. They were wild times. Meanwhile, Palm Springs awaits the opening of the Grape House, a luxury cannabis-centric boutique hotel development that includes a dispensary shop featuring a curated mix of upscale cannabis, accessories, and apparel, accompanied by a restaurant and smoking parlor. That sounds fancy. Rooted is rethinking the cannabis consumption lounge by combining high-quality cannabis with elite customer service and live events like comedy, music, yoga, and sport-viewing parties in a luxe-designed space. Premium hotel chains, from the fashionable and stylish Soho House to the more traditional Accor Hotel Group, are actively looking to integrate CBD products into their in-room amenities, a trend that will undoubtedly continue to propagate throughout the hospitality industry. Yeah, I'm sure there's places where that's already happening.
Yeah.
So cannabis has an updated reputation, and the market will respond accordingly. Every category of retail has a spectrum of products from value to luxury, cannabis included. What we're seeing today is only the beginning of what the high-end cannabis lifestyle can ultimately become.
Two Chainz. Showing all the hope.
Bring us some more episodes.
Yeah, that show was funny as hell.
Yeah, it was. Tell me about it.
It's probably back on. We just haven't watched Vice in a while. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening, man. I'm feeling good. I like the Sour Patch.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like back in the day doing the Cabbage Patch. Showing my age. Sorry, everybody. It's a great song, too, if you never
Do you know how
it.
To do the Cabbage Patch?
Yeah, back when I was like 18, 19,
I'm not good
20.
At those kind of dances.
I know how to do the percolator, though.
Time for the percolator.
I like the
Macarena. No, what's the other one? The one where you like...
The slide? The
yeah, shuffle? Yeah.
Yeah, that was a
good one. Oh, the shuffle is fun. That's from Chicago, you know.
Yeah, that is from Chicago.
That's a good one.
He was on the news not too long ago.
I can never do it. I finally figure out what I'm supposed to be doing, and then they change to the next thing. I'm like, ah!
Or they change to the next song. You're still trying to figure out the first
step. Wait, I got it. I can do five consistent steps the right way. It doesn't matter. It's still fun, even if you're terrible at it.
Shit, everything.
I do envy the person who can do those things. Choreographed dance.
I always dance to the beat of my own drums. So
could never do aerobics in the 90s. I just struggled.
Let's get physical.
80s and 90s.
Physical.
I did wear a leotard to the
Did you wear socks? Those like.
Oh hell yeah!
You did.
I wore leggings with a thong bodysuit over.
I remember
the leggings.
You wearing that. You wore that one time to the gym with
me. Scrunchy socks.
You didn't wear the scrunchy socks.
And Reebok high tops.
Oh, you were one
Hello.
Of those. You were one of those.
Let's get physical. Oh, heck
physical.
Yeah. I looked good.
Let me hear your body talk.
For a minute
Your
there.
Body talk.
I worked my ass off.
If you all don't know that song, it's by Olivia Newton-John.
I used my favorite machine at the gym for
John
cardio.
Travolta. You did? What?
Because I could not do the aerobics class. I couldn't keep up. My friend was an aerobics instructor. I honored her. And I stayed in the gym. And there was the stairs. They're like an escalator.
Still love the stairs.
It's
you still
the
love
best it. Machine. And the rower was
Mr.
good.
Mr. Weedman had a crush on Olivia Newton-John when he was very young.
She was cute.
Oh my God.
Well, I like John Travolta.
Well, who didn't? And I liked Olivia Newton-John. Who didn't?
Well, then.
It's showing our age, everybody. I'm sorry. If you haven't seen Grease, watch it. It's a great love story. Hey, everybody. We appreciate you listening around the world. We're being silly, having some fun with you all. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to check us out on WeMan420 Chronicles on Insta, WeMan420Pod on Twitter. Send us an email. We just got another one from Paula. She just moved to Iowa from Texas. Thanks, Paula. You're the best.
Iowa from Texas?
Yeah.
It's going to be cold. Texas, you better get some good jackets.
She wants good weed. Poor girl.
You can get some good weed, I'm sure. There's got to be some farmers up there making some good shit.
I hope so. So
get to know your local farmer.
There you go. It's
and get
true.
A good jacket.
There you go. Hey, everybody. WeMan420Chronicles@gmail.com. Like I said, we're being silly with y'all. We love you all. Peace be with you all out there in the world. As Paulie always says, smoke smart. Puffing away.
Puff, puff, pass.